You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and this is the Save the Marriage Podcast. And today I want to look at a very interesting question. My question is, why good people have bad marriages? Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how many good, sincere, loving people end up having not so great marriages? And so today I want to talk about how that can change. Now, 50%, somewhere around that, depending on statistics, but about 50% of marriages don't make it. You know, basically, it's a flip of a coin. It's a little more complicated than the fact that it's just a random choice, but basically every other marriage ends in divorce. Now, many others in that other 50% are either bored and disconnected, or they're conflicted and angry, which, by the way, is often also an indication of being very disconnected. Now, those are kind of interesting statistics, but statistics don't really matter. What happens in your life is what matters. It doesn't matter what the broad range is. You know, that sometimes people contact me and say, what are the chances of me saving my marriage? I mean, statistically speaking, and my response is, statistics don't matter. Your marriage matters. Your situation matters. The uniqueness of what's going on for you is what matters. And so you can't predict it based on what else has happened. I can tell you that I've seen marriages that I thought were easily fixed end in divorce, and those that I thought were hanging by a thread to come back and be strong marriages. And so what I really know is statistics just don't matter. Now, most people, when they're looking at a marriage crisis, they really look at two different choices. One is they know they could end it. They could just stop it. They could either separate or live together, but only in the house. Go ahead and get a divorce. That's the first option. Or the second they see is to continue as it is, just kind of dragging through the years, waiting for something somehow to change, but really just signing up for more of the same. Those are the binary choices that most people see, and really in any situation, to either end it or continue as it is. There's a third option that I'm always pushing for, and that third option is to transform the relationship. Not just make sure that you stay stuck together and not end up divorced, but truly saving your marriage. Not keeping it from divorce, but saving your marriage. The reason I'm so impassioned about that is because I believe that nobody sets out to have a disconnected or a conflicted marriage. Nobody sets out to have a bad marriage. Nobody sets out to divorce. Almost everyone starts with the intention of having a great marriage. Now, I'll say almost because I know that there are situations where people get together for other reasons. You know, I've met some people that got together so that somebody didn't get sent out of the country, or they got together because they got pregnant, or they got together for some, you know, just kind of made sense. But generally, even in those, they want to have a great marriage. There's an intention of that. So what gets in the way between saying I do and somewhere along the way either getting into conflicts, either getting into trouble, or disconnecting and ending in I don't anymore? What happens between those two places? Because I've seen lots of wonderful people have really miserable relationships. Now, let me just kind of name off what I see are the big 8 reasons why marriages turn bad. And you can use this as an assessment tool, but you can also use it as a way of shifting your perspective. The first reason I see that marriages turn bad is because there's a lack of good examples. How many people do you think see prospering marriages? How many prospering marriages did you see? Or did you see conflicted or disconnected relationships? I can think back on my good fortune of watching my grandparents, both sides, had great marriages, and my parents had great marriage, and my wife's parents have a great marriage. And so I was able to see that example, but I also had aunts and uncles who had miserable relationships. And really, if I look at it, you know, if I look at the combinedness of most of my aunts and uncles, they relieved a lot of other families of having to have divorces, statistically speaking, because I have two aunts that were married multiple times, and I have an uncle who's been married multiple times, and then I have another aunt and uncle who've been together, you know, for a long time and have a good marriage too. So I get to see these examples of bad and good in my family. I grew up with that. I grew up watching the conflict, and I grew up watching what it did to the family. So we often have those examples of bad relationships. I was just fortunate to also have the example of a good relationship, one that I could say, wow, you know, that's what love looks like. And that's what it looks like to prioritize your relationship. And it's what it looks like to dedicate yourself to being a part of a team. But the first reason that it's difficult for most people to have a great relationship is because they don't have an example. They don't have a place to draw from. They didn't see it in action. Now, the other part of that is that even if you had parents who had a good relationship, you may not have really seen the inner workings of it. You know, they might have been dealing with a lot of the internal stuff outside of where you could see it. So you didn't see how they dealt with conflict, or you didn't see how they dealt with being affectionate with each other and prioritizing the relationship. You didn't see the struggles along the way. As I've gotten to different places in my life, different life events of kids and in my marriage, you know, I recognize that my parents went through some of the same stuff, just life events, but I never watched how they had to deal with it. And so even if we had good examples, we didn't have good examples that we could see the patterns. We weren't able to pick out the information, which brings us to the second reason why marriages turn bad. It's a lack of knowledge. Let me tell you just kind of a quick little story. Where my son and I are going to be headed off to the Dominican Republic in just a few weeks on a mission trip. And it's a place that I've been before. My son's been before. I've been with my daughter before. And part of what we're doing is helping a congregation build their church. In fact, we've now done it that we're working on the third church. And in that third church, we first built the structure, and then we went back, and they went back last year. I wasn't with them, and they built pews. Well, we had all the wood in place. We had everything there that would be necessary for the pews, but in every pew, a board was flipped. It was a simple mistake, and the reason was because we haven't made those before, and the drawings weren't very clear, and the directions weren't very helpful, and so the pews were made in a way that made them incredibly uncomfortable to sit on. That's kind of what I'm talking about with a marriage. If you don't have the right knowledge, you build it into something that's not very comfortable. You build it into something that's not very sustainable without realizing that that's what you're doing. But when you start just with a board flip, just that was all it took, a board flipped. And from then on, the rest was laid out in what had already happened. Now, the good news is we go back this year, we take those apart, we flip the board, put them back together, and we have pews that will be comfortable. The same way is if you have some new knowledge, a new way of understanding, then suddenly a marriage has all kinds of potentials that it didn't have before just because you lacked the knowledge. You didn't know what you were doing. So here's the knowledge piece that most people don't know when they're getting married. The whole goal of marriage is about being a we, about being a team, about being in it together, about having each other's backs, about being a we. That's it. If you have that as a starting point, then everything else begins to make sense. But that's not a piece of knowledge that we all carry with us. It's not like, you know, at that point of getting married, somebody hands you a little instruction book and says, hey, this is what you're trying to get to. Now, it's in there. It's in the vows. Unfortunately, the way we talk through the vows, we don't even think about it. We don't think about what it means to be committed to the relationship. Not just committed to the other person, but committed to the relationship, committed to the marriage, regardless of how you're feeling, how the day's going, how anything is going in life, committed to that relationship. That's about building a we. And that's the fact of knowledge that most people don't know at the beginning. If you don't know the goal you're shooting for, you're not likely to hit that goal. If you simply know the goal you're shooting for, then you keep fixing while you're shooting. aimed a little high, aimed a little low, aimed a little to the left, aimed a little to the right, but you get better and better at it. And that's the thing about a marriage. If you know where you're headed, then you keep writing the course. You keep fixing how you get there until you finally arrive there. And then you find that there are other places along the way that you still have to build that in. What most people misunderstand is they kind of believe that the process of getting to we is a one-time event. You're there and that's it. Instead of recognizing that we bounce back and forth from a place of connection to a place of less of a connection, of maybe not disconnection, but less of a connection, more of a commitment to we and less a connection of we, and then we find new places. You think about how couples struggle with money. Well, the real struggle with money is about how do we use this resource? How about with kids? How are we going to raise these kids? How about with sex? How are we going to connect with each other? How about time and priorities? How are we going to work our lives around this? How about functioning in the family, the chores of the household? How are we going to get this family moving forward, and how are we going to take care of this household? Those are daily struggles for couples, and they keep trying to solve them without recognizing that the base cause is a struggle about being a we. So the second reason why marriages turn bad is because they don't know what they're trying to get to. It's a lack of knowledge about trying to get to a we. Now, the third reason is related to that. It's because people get focused on themselves. They start asking, what am I getting out of this? What's coming my way? What's the last thing you did for me? Instead of saying, what am I putting into this? What am I going to keep pushing into this relationship that I can offer? And that's because they don't understand number two, getting to we. They begin to focus on, what am I getting? They forget that love is an expression, not a feeling. Love is action. Love is about how we move outside of ourselves to treat someone with respect, with love, to be loving, even when we don't feel loving. You know, there is that piece of the Bible that says, love your enemy. Not just love your neighbor, that's easy, but love your enemy. It's not talking about having gushy feelings, warm feelings. It's about having loving actions. And if we're called to do that with enemies, we're certainly called to do that with the person who's most close to us, to be loving in our actions no matter what, instead of saying, what's the love you're showing me and why am I not feeling those emotions now? We get lost in that romantic ideal that comes to us instead of the idea that love is an action and I can always choose my action. You know, when you look at the research in positive psychology, there's one fact that is repetitively proven that people, when they reach beyond themselves, find satisfaction and happiness. When people are being altruistic, helping other people, doing good things for other people, they're constantly feeling a bit better than when they get selfish and want something for themselves. Study after study has shown that by reaching beyond ourselves, we find happiness. We find ourselves. We find that satisfaction. But in our culture, when it's all about what can you get, we lose track of that, especially when we are not mindful that we're trying to get to that being a we. And so our focus on the self leads to a lot of problems where we shift from a good person having a bad marriage. Number four is a loss of connection over time. Now, this is an interesting one, and you'll notice that these kind of build on themselves. If you haven't seen examples of people doing great marriages, and you don't know what you're trying to get to, about trying to get to a we, and you begin to focus on yourself, then you're going to begin to move away from the connection that feeds the relationship. We humans are built to be in connection. We have to have human connection. All of us do. We're desperate for it. And when we don't get it where we are kind of designed for that in a marriage, then we start looking for it elsewhere. And as we do, we begin to pull back the resources from where it needs to be and putting them somewhere where it doesn't need to be. Do you remember physics? I'm not a physicist. I'm not a scientist. I'm horrible at math. But I remember the idea of entropy. Entropy is that unless energy is continually added to a system, it will so slowly digress. It's my reason for saying that my office is a mess. Yeah. I don't put any energy into it. And so entropy takes over. And you can use that as the reason why a house is always needing to be cleaned. Entropy comes in and you're constantly having to put more energy into it to try to get it straightened up. Well, it's no different in a relationship. When energy is not put into a relationship, often because the person is saying, what am I getting out of this? Then entropy takes over and the system begins to devolve, to fall apart, to separate, to pull apart. That's the fact of entropy. It will begin to lose its energy and begin to have less and less organization in it. Now, doesn't that sound like what you often see in a bad marriage? When the connection has been left behind, when the energy is not being put into the relationship, entropy takes over and the relationship begins to fall apart, which leads to less connection, which leads to more entropy, which leads to less connection, because who wants to put energy into that? So number four is a loss of connection over time. Number five is a loss of priority, which often comes because there's lacking in connection. It's also from a misunderstanding of priorities. Stephen Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, talked about the fact that there's a quadrant of events in our lives. There's the urgent and important. There's the urgent and unimportant. There's the not urgent but important. And then there's the not urgent and not important. And generally, in a busy days, we don't even get to those not urgent, not important. Those are the things that just, they don't matter and it's not even calling for us. So they just kind of drift away naturally. But what really gets our attention is often the urgent and important, which has to be taken care of. Those are crisis kind of things that have to be dealt with. But then the next category that robs us is the urgent but unimportant. It pops up on the screen and it gets us all worried and we run around with it, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. What doesn't get the time and needs the time is the not urgent but important. The not urgent but important. And the relationship ends up often falling into that category until suddenly it's urgent and important and potentially urgent and unimportant. And then we'll eventually end up in the unurgent and unimportant category. The not urgent but important are the things that are not calling our names. It's not ringing the bells. There are no sirens. There's nothing pointing saying this has to be dealt with today. But they're crucial to be dealt with. Relationships are that way. Marriages are that way. They're so important. And yet because they're not constantly calling for our attention, we end up shuffling behind the things that are urgent, calling at us, our inbox and our messages from friends. Facebook sometimes feels that way. You know, there are lots of things that call for our attention. The instant notifications on our phones and tablets are all calling us to take action on unimportant things. Sometimes a lot of what circles us seem very interesting and very important, but are really unimportant. They're just yelling our name so loud that it feels important when really it's just the urgency of it. So we always have to take care of the urgent and important. You know, when I look at my business model or my family or my relationships, I always try to focus on first, let's take care of what's urgent and important. These things have to be done and they have to be done now. But then I try to look for what's important, but perhaps not urgent. I don't want to get caught up in the things that are urgent, but really unimportant. And a marriage is a primary piece of that. So much of a relationship is important, but it's not calling our name. And so we lose track of it. And over time, that's a loss of priority. When I talk about priority, people think, you know, they have this list of 4 or 5 things that are just important to them. I'm talking not about your stated priorities, but your tacit priorities, the things that really show your priorities. Because we can all have a list and we all have this idealized list in our head of what our priorities are. But when we look at how we spend our time, how we spend our money, how we spend our energy, it rarely matches our stated priorities unless we are being very intentional. Priorities are about intentionality. And intentionality is what makes sure that we're always pointing at what's not urgent, but incredibly important. So the fifth reason that marriages go bad is just loss of priority. We didn't keep our eyes on that. We got caught up in other things. We started thinking that our job or our hobbies or our kids or something else was taking precedent over taking care of that most important relationship. The most important relationship in any household is the marriage. When that loses its priority, everything else will begin to spin out of control and begin to devolve in that entropy we talked about. Okay, number six reason that marriages go bad is a loss of responsibility. Now, I'm not talking about blame here. I'm not talking about what happens to you in life, but what you do about that. Responsibility, as I've said so many times, is the ability to respond. And when we lose our sense of responsibility, we stop realizing that we have a choice. We start pointing the finger at somebody else or something else that is causing the problem. We can point at a spouse, we can point at the kids, we can point at the job, we can point at all kinds of other things and say, that's what's to blame. Without looking at what do I do in this situation to get us away from this. It's not about assigning blame, it's deciding what's going to happen now. We never control what happens in life, but we can always choose how we will respond. Now, that doesn't mean that we instantly choose that. It's not like when something horrible is happening to us, we put on our Spock mind and go to total logic. We are going to have an emotional response, and that emotional response may get us into trouble. So it's not about the immediate response, but it's saying, you know, how do I respond as I'm aware of that? There's a difference between our reaction, the momentary reaction, and then what we do long-term responding. Sometimes I've watched couples where their reaction is always so intense that they never get to the place of changing their response. They come out with anger and with venom and blaming the other person. And when you have two people doing that, you're locking in to a process that is incredibly destructive. But when either one is doing it, they're buying into a story about how they are not responsible. And yet we all have the capacity of responding differently, even if it means we have to go back and say, I'm so sorry about how I responded to that. I let my anger, I let my hurt get the better of me. Now I want us to have another conversation. Can you forgive me? Can we move beyond this? So number six, the reason for bad marriages is a loss of responsibility. It's not that the person doesn't know how to be responsible. It's that we lose track of it in the process of the devolving relationship. So number seven is an unwillingness to forgive. We just talked about that. That we all have a place where we need to say, you know what, I've got to find a way of moving beyond these bumps that happen in intimate relationships. And there is no more intimate relationship than a marriage. And so there are going to be even more bumps along the way where you might feel hurt, or you might feel cast aside, or you might feel ignored, or you might feel misunderstood, or lots of other feelings you can have. And you might be able to say, you know what, this is a part of the process, and I've got to find a way of doing kind of a moment-by-moment daily forgiveness. I call this everyday forgiveness in my Save the Marriage system. The everyday forgiveness is when we recognize that those hurts aren't necessarily meant to hurt us. We take them on as hurts, but they're not meant to hurt us. It's a side effect of the response of the other person. So we have to be willing to forgive. Now, what we do about the bigger things of forgiveness is we still choose to forgive. There may be some consequences. You know, people mistake forgiveness with forgetting, for letting it all go, for not having any change after the fact. And forgiveness is deciding to not be lugging around that pain forever, of choosing to let that pain go and let it be an awareness that you don't have to always carry it around. What often happens is people are upset about something and they don't want to forgive, but the reason they don't want to forgive is because they want some justice, some level of flesh from the other person. They want some payback, and that keeps us stuck. Sometimes we have to accept that somebody hurt us and it was unintentional. Sometimes a spouse will say something and it's not meant to be hurtful, but we take it that way. And we have to find ways to forgive not just those words, but the actions that come throughout a lifetime. We have a lifetime of interaction with this person with whom we have melded our life together. Yes, there will be hurts, but yes, we can find a way of forgiving. That's a part of the process of moving to a healthy relationship, is to say, you know what, I'm going to forgive. I'm not going to use forgiveness as a weapon. I'm going to understand that forgiveness is what frees me up to walk forward. So number 7 is an unwillingness to forgive that creates those bad marriages. Now, number 8 is about a confusion of agreement and acceptance. And this is more of a general understanding that you don't have to see eye to eye on things. Couples tend to believe that they should be able to see everything eye to eye. And I believe that in a partnership, which is what a marriage is, that there is room for differences of opinion. In fact, if there's not a difference of opinion, somebody's not really showing up to that relationship. And when I was doing business consulting and I would find a partnership that agreed on everything, I would simply say, one of you doesn't need to be here if you agree on everything. Somebody's got to bring something new to the table. And it's the same with a marriage. You don't have to agree on everything. You don't have to be eye to eye, and you don't even have to be on the same page. There simply has to be respect for the other person and for the other person's perspective. Remember that we all have a different way of understanding the world and how it's coming at us. We have a different paradigm, a different way of perceiving what's going on. And so, of course, we're going to be on different pages. And, of course, we're not going to see eye to eye. That is a given once you recognize that, that marriage is not a mind meld. It's about two individuals with their own opinions, their own views, coming together and saying, we choose to be in this team. We choose to be a we and build this from here. But we will both be bringing our best into this. So it's not about agreeing. It's about accepting that the other person comes from a different perspective. The other person comes from a different viewpoint, and that's okay. We just have to find a way of putting those together and saying what's best for us. We often get into that either or that we talked about at the beginning, and the either or is either you get what you want or I get what I want, rather than saying, how do we find what's best for us? What's best for the relationship? What's best for the we? What's best for the family? And that usually changes the perspective. So then when the other person has a viewpoint, you can listen and understand where they're coming from. You don't have to accept where they're coming from. You just have to accept that they have a different viewpoint. And that's a huge difference between agreement and understanding. I can understand where somebody's coming from. I don't have to agree with them on where they arrive. And at some point, we find a place to say, what's the best for us? So number 8 is confusion between agreement and acceptance and understanding in the relationship. Okay, so those are the 8 reasons why marriages get into trouble. Lack of good example, lack of knowledge, a focus on the self, a loss of connection over time, a loss of priority, which leads to a loss of responsibility, and then an unwillingness to forgive, which is all confused by our misunderstandings of agreement and acceptance. What happens from there? Change comes from 2 places. 1, it comes from a new perspective. And 2, it comes from new actions. But you only will have the new actions when you have a new perspective. That's why I talk through those reasons. I could have just listed all 8 of those reasons, that those are it. But in each one, I wanted to elaborate a bit on how you could make a change within those examples, how you could make a change in each of those reasons and move to a different place. They have new actions because you have a new perspective. If you started this without understanding what the goal of marriage is, you now understand the goal of marriage. That will change your perspective. Suddenly, your new actions flow from your new perspective. A new perspective, a new action always comes from new information. Hopefully, you've gotten some of that new information today. If your pattern is stuck, you have to look for a new perspective. Einstein once said, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." You had a certain way of thinking that got you stuck in your marriage. That's how we all enter in. And then we have to look for a different way, a different viewpoint. Hopefully you found some different viewpoints today. See, you can always get to this place where people get stuck. They say, you know, I can fix this myself. Don't bother me. Don't tell me something different. I can fix it myself. But that always keeps you stuck in a new way of, in an old way of thinking. A new way of thinking is what pulls you out of that. It's what Einstein was saying, is we need a new way of understanding the problems that we've created it from the old way. So if your perspective is stuck, your approach is stuck. And if your approach is stuck, there will be no new actions that will change the relationship. Change your perspective and suddenly all new actions are possible. And you realize that good people can have good relationships, can have good marriages, because they're choosing to act differently. One way you might find some new information is to check out my Save the Marriage system. If you don't have it, let me urge you to grab my Save the Marriage system. You can find it at savethemarriage.com, and it will give you a new understanding of what you're trying to get to. Not just that, but how you get there. So if that's of interest to you, please go to savethemarriage.com and grab that Save the Marriage system and begin to implement a new perspective in your life that's going to change into new actions that will transform your relationship. If there's something that's made sense here, I would love it if you would share this with other people and let them know that there's a chance in their marriage too. More than that, if there's an idea you have that you would like to hear about, let me know by sending me an email at podcast@savethemarriage.com. Now, this is not where you get some help individually. We have other ways of doing that. This is where you give me some feedback on what do you think about the podcast. It comes straight to me. I'm the one who reads it. Nobody else does. And I'm the one who acts on that. So let me know if you have some ideas that you would like to hear about in this podcast. That's podcast@savethemarriage.com. And if you're ready for a change in perspective and you don't have it, grab my Save the Marriage system at savethemarriage.com. This is Lee Baucom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.